When it's time to scale your business, it's time for Shopify. Get everything you need to grow the way you want. Like, all the way. Stack more sales with the best converting checkout on the planet. Track your cha-chings from every channel, right in one spot. And turn real-time reporting into big-time opportunities. Take your business to a whole new level. Switch to Shopify. Start your free trial today.
From Geico Subconscious News, I'm Tammy Racing Thoughts, broadcasting from your brain. Tonight's top worry: if something happens to your apartment and you need to, like, stay in a hotel and pay for it, that would be crazy, right? Art Palpitations has more.
That would be crazy, Tammy, but you got surprisingly affordable renter's insurance through Geico, so it could be covered, giving you peace of mind.
Aw, I love a story that ends well.
Next up, love stories. Are they all they're cracked up to be?
It feels good to worry less. It feels good to Geico.
First off, I was excited to talk about that story and the implications of that story. But just on the surface, I know it on reference in Isles of the Everdark, and having named this podcast coming up on 6 years ago, following Know It On just based on vibes, I was over the moon.
It really is. Like, I'm wondering who you have on the inside, Trevor, to keep.
Yes.
Because I remember being like, oh, this is going to be like the most important name in the Cosmere when we started this.
Which turned out to be true.
Welcome back to Following Know It On, a Stormlight podcast. This is episode 288. We have now finished Isles of the Emberdark, which means, gentlemen, you are back to Cosmere Current. We spent a whole like week Cosmere Current back the week before Wind and Truth came out. We are back to mostly Cosmere Current. How does it feel?
There's always an asterisk. No matter how Cosmere Current you are, there's always an asterisk. But yes, we have finished Isles of the Emberdark. We have not read Fires of December's pre-release chapters, if you want to include that, or White Sand. But other than that, we are Cosmere Current. It feels good. It feels good. I got to open up the Coppermind to prep for this episode, which was nice. A refreshing feeling to open up that website for the first time in like 2 years. So yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I am holding the chalice of Cosmere Currency very loosely in my hands. I do not believe that will last long. I've only had it for like a week at a time, so this is like my second time sort of claiming it, even though, as Trevor mentioned, we haven't read the preview chapters of Fires of December, and we also haven't done White Sand yet. But it does feel good. It feels good to be in the know. I did not go to the Coppermind for these episodes because, frankly, our entire time, what we've been doing is like 5 years, I've been petrified and don't go to the Coppermind, like, period. So it's never in my instinct to go there. I have gone there for some things. I remember doing that to brush up on some old Stormlight before Book 5 came out in some various ways to kind of like get some highlights and review some other chapters and things. But yeah, very limited use of the Coppermind for me. But that's something that I probably need to go take a good deep dive into now that I don't have to worry about spoilers of anything, because I can go on a whole tangent. I'll keep it super quick, but spoilers aren't for stuff like that in the Cosmere aren't where you expect them to be. It's not just like you'll go look up the page for Isles of the Emberdark. It's like, no, if something crazy happens and someone is now some different thing, that's going to come up in some other, like, many other pages. And so that's why I've avoided it like entirely, as I mentioned. So, yeah.
The big one that I've experienced, not personally, but somebody told me about, finding spoilers where they were not expected, was somebody clicked on the page for the Ghostbloods with Rhythm of War having been published, and they were like in Words of Radiance trying to find out more about the Ghostbloods. And they came across an entire section about Kelsier on their Ghostblood page, and they're like, what?
What? Yeah.
It has. With that context, I will say for this episode, I deliberately went to do this. I went to Isles of Emberdark page, and they have the chapter summaries. I clicked on, having finished the book, I clicked on Mother Fran's page in desperate attempt that it would relink me to Cultivation's page, and it did not.
Oh, no.
Which was unfortunate. But
yeah, you know. That is. I feel like if I go and look through the Coppermind right now, being current, I will still be like sweating and nervous to click on any link or anything. I feel like I won't be able to handle it for some time. I'm gonna have to get over that fear of the spoilers.
I will admit, Trevor, that live during recording of that episode where you spun that theory about Mother Fran and Cultivation, I had to pull up the Coppermine page as we were recording just to see if there was something that I had missed that was big that you were onto, and I discovered the same thing you did. But
I, not to say that it has been disproven.
Correct.
I just think it has yet to be proven.
There you go. There you go. Well, for our episode today, we are going to cover chapters 49 through 55. As we've just been talking about, we have read all the way through the book. I went ahead and let Trevor and Paul go all the way to the end here, but we're going to focus mainly on 49 through 55. Our conversation might spill a little bit into the later ones, but we do have a lot to cover tonight, so I want to focus on just those episodes. We'll cover the final chapters in our last episode for the book. And before we jump into it, on the pacing of things, I want to explain myself to you guys and to our listeners just a little bit. I did dump a lot on you guys for these last two episodes, and I did that on purpose. We have a lot of material to cover, like nearly twice as much as we have been for these previous chapters, but I really enjoyed binge reading this book, probably because it's the first Brandon Sanderson book that I got to do that with. I read this entire book in like 5 days, and I thought it benefited a lot from being read quickly. It very much has like a swashbuckling adventure type feel to me, and that was fun to read quickly. So I wanted to give you guys at least a little bit of that experience when we got to this point of chapter 49, and then I could just say go, hoping that you would just go like kind of binge read maybe one or two sittings the whole rest of the book and at least get a little bit of that experience with the end of the book. So before we jump into the chapters, give me like 15 seconds, 30 seconds on like how that felt. How did you feel the end of this book went for you? Was it enjoyable, surprising, not what you're used to? Thoughts?
It was definitely not what I was used to. I think even, I don't remember exactly which chapter it was, but I know we were getting to another chapter while I was reading through that. In my head, I almost stopped my audiobook after because I'm like, oh, okay, this is a big like cliffhanger. This is where I'm supposed to stop. Like, I'm not used to like doing that and then flipping the next page. And so it was really fun. Coming into the podcast, I'm kind of like almost overwhelmed. I'm like, oh my gosh, so like so much, like that there was a lot of like page count and a lot of really cool things to talk about that I'm like, wow, you know, this is more than like two chapters to walk through, but super exciting. And I'm really glad we got to just read through it. I know we even talked about that with previous books. I know I'm going over like the 15 seconds or whatever. We talked about previous books as maybe that book would have been nicer, more well consumed,
yeah,
in a faster read through. And so that is something. But overall, very much enjoyed it all the way through. Absolutely. A plus experience for me.
Paul, your fear of the Coppermind, your fear of getting to read past a cliffhanger. It's like you're the baby elephant that's had the one ton ball that's had the one ton ball tied to its leg, and it's just grown up that way. And now that the ball isn't on its leg, it still feels like it's trapped in the pen.
I am completely free to roam. I am free to go anywhere, but I have confined myself into my own prison.
Right.
Imaginary prison because of this podcast. So I blame...
Okay, you can step out into the light.
I primarily blame Trevor, but Elliot is now an accomplice since he has led us with this book. So, yeah. No, I will work to break free of those shackles that I've put on myself. And
Elliot is also
will share that, you know.
Elliot has also been let out into light, and he's now turned around and helping you out of the small cave, but you're still afraid of the light.
Exactly. I don't know if I can do it. I'm like hobbling along.
Oh man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get going into these chapters, unless Trevor, you had any other thoughts there.
No, we can get going. So my chapter summary, oh boy. We start with Dusk having just returned from another push into the Cave of Death, and we get the mysterious voice from last episode. I know you're lying or whatever. And we spun a bunch of theories, or I spun a bunch of theories on who that could be. And I'm like, oh, here's my time. It's going to be Mother Franz showing up at the climax of the book, and it's going to be Cultivation. Whoa! No. I mean, maybe, but no. It's some military police lady who is spying on Danger, and she is giving him an audit on his performance and why a bunch of guards keep dying. And then she asks him to testify against Danger, and Dusk is like, okay. And then she walks away, and we don't hear from her the rest of the book. We then go talk to Chrysalis again. And Chrysalis is like, I'm in trouble. And then we go talk to Starling. Starling gets zapped by the intensifier, and it weakens her manacles to the point where her spirit form emerges in her cognition for a couple brief seconds, and she gets to go visit the spirit shores. And when the spirit shores were announced or referenced earlier in this book, I was like, oh, okay, that's a cool idea that, you know, dragons can go to the spirit realm and go hang out and commune and whatever. That's how they answer their prayers and talk to each other and et cetera, et cetera. No, absolutely not. Well, yes, but that's the bare minimum of what they are. I will make the claim the spirit shores might be the coolest thing Brandon has come up with since the high storm. I'll be that bold. They get to go walk on the spirit shores where there are a bunch of dragons eternally staring off into the distance. And Starling meets not Frost, but Hoid. One of my predictions has come correct there. Thank you. We talk to Hoid for a chapter. We get some cool name drops in that chapter and some cool non-name drops in that chapter as well. Then we come back and the Daquara attacks. And then we kind of fight off the Daquara for a couple chapters. And then the final end of the book will be next episode, but we have read it. So if you haven't finished the book, go do that. And that's where we are.
All righty. Plenty to talk about. We'll see how much we have time to talk about. We're going to have to be a little sporty here as we go through these seven chapters. So starting at the beginning, 49, what do you want to jump into? Oh, I'll start this one actually by admitting that, yes, I baited you a little bit with the military police lady.
I absolutely could have included 49 last episode. I just want to put that out there.
I could have. And yes, I had to torture you with at least one cliffhanger. And of course, I had to put you guys on the hook and get official predictions on who you thought that was going to be. And yeah, Sorry, not sorry.
I definitely, like, as this was unfolding and we were seeing that this was some, like, military police lady, I kept waiting for the, like, I still kept waiting for the twist. Trevor definitely was, we were pushing it really hard in the last episode, so was still waiting and waiting for, like, something to come up with that. I'm like, there's no way it's just someone here asking us to testify or to get Danger in legal trouble. Like, it didn't feel right. But we super mega hyped it up. So, yeah, everyone is to blame for that going wrong, I guess, myself included. So, Elliot for misleading us, making us predict, and then Trevor for running with the ball. It would have been so cool to see Mother Frond. Absolutely.
I've been successfully baited, and not only was I baited, I clamped and ran. And
yes,
ran 100 yards with the bait.
Yeah, absolutely.
Think of how fun it was for all of us laughing at you.
Yeah.
I bet it was. Well, either that or people listened to the last episode and they're like, oh my gosh, how long are they going to talk about this thing, which is probably so that. Not like coming to fruition, you know?
Elliot, you were gifted power and you have now abused said power. That this is like
only one time. Only
yeah, one, yeah, yeah. This one, is like one abuse. If we were to read The Way of Kings and I stopped the chapter at, like, I don't know, Kaladin hearing a voice on the wind or something, and then it just turns out to be Syl and he didn't see her. Like, that's just, you know, boo.
There are way worse things I could have done to you. I was very kind with these chapter splits overall, and I couldn't resist. I just had to be mean one time. But the rest of that chapter in 49 is they fire the intense fire on the manacles, and Starling gets like a small taste of her actual powers, her freedom, and she gets a little bit of glimpse of maybe if she did go down that path of accepting Danger's offer and he could truly free her. And I felt like this was a necessary temptation for the plot. This decision had to be at least somewhat difficult for Starling. And this was the moment that, like, made it kind of tough. Up until now, you never really thought she ever was going to join Danger. But here in this chapter, we get that little bit of glimpse of, like, oh, but hold on a second. Maybe he can actually follow through on this. I think that's what this chapter was trying to achieve.
It's not till later, but we have read the episodes or the chapters. It's not till chapter, I think, 56 that they really shoot her manacle and she holds them together herself with her own power. And that's when you feel that,
right?
Okay, no, she really is making the choice to, was it to stay or to void the contract so her crews, like, would get free or something like that?
Yeah, I was going to say all of this was hinging around her not wanting to let her crew fall subject to judgment and potentially death, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that essentially the synopsis that she has this dialogue going back and forth this whole time of, like, trying to figure out how to get her manacles destroyed, but then thinking, okay, if I do that, then, and I free myself and go about my way, my crew is basically gonna get killed or imprisoned and die. Like, is kind of her what's happening. And so I don't remember, is this chapter where she's beginning to kind of formulate that and starting to question? Because she questions and kind of ponders on that for a while. It may be a little later when she has that, but this is at least part of her, like, discovery about, like, the manacles and this machine and all this stuff. Because for a while she also has the doubt, like, can this machine actually break this dragon manacle technology? Like,
yeah.
He says it can, but, like, I don't know if I actually believe it can, you know?
And
all that's kind of starting to formulate.
Something that I thought of, too, is the difference of time under a contract between her and her crew. So she's immortal, but her crew is not, except for maybe Chrysalis. And the contract is for 20 years. You serve me for 20 years, or maybe it's 30 years. I don't remember. Or maybe he ups it like right at the end. And for her, and she has this mental dialogue, that's not anything. You know, that's maybe a year to us. Yeah. But to her crew, she's signing away 20%, 30% of their life under the Malwish. And so that one of the reasons why she holds off the contract and voids the contract is for her crew, and how that 20 years and that 30 years would affect her crew more than her. So I thought that was an interesting concept. Can we talk about the Spirit Shores now?
Absolutely.
Let's do it. Ooh, I have artwork for you.
I have seen this artwork, but yes. Oh. I had to go look it up because I was hoping it was as epic as I was being described, and I believe it was.
Trying to pull it up here. Here we go. It should be coming up here in a second. Here is the in book artwork for the Spirit Shores with the dragons in their death state, not yet death state. It's kind of interesting, actually, what is going on with the dragons here. I loved this piece of artwork. As soon as I saw it, I thought of you, Paul, because you're kind of the dragon nerd on the podcast. You've gotten, you know, a little giddy about dragons in the past, and I thought you'd appreciate this one. I did, though, after looking at it briefly, kind of get really sad that they didn't pick this one for the full color treatment. I really kind of wish they would have done this one instead of some of the other ones in the glossy full color style instead of the just pencil style. But nonetheless, still pretty cool.
I kind of agree with you there. Like a good sheep who's followed this podcast blindly and does not go outside of my gates, as we've established, I did not look up the art beforehand so that I could see it. I had a feeling that we'd be looking at it. And it is undoubtedly really cool to see. I'm even almost a little surprised at the imagery. I do love the use of scope, like the use of size here. Seeing how gargantuan these dragons are is pretty impressive. Because the other artwork we have of dragons, right, is in Tress. Like we see Zysis, right, as a dragon. And this even surpasses, I feel like, the scale I had in my head there, you know? Yeah. And so that is well done. But yeah, I think colors would have been super cool. I don't know if this was even intentional. How much do they, Trevor, you probably remember, how much did they really describe the look of the Spirit Shores? I remember it being really cool, but I don't remember how much time it actually spent. And I know that's Elliot's classic pet peeve with Brandon Sanderson sometimes, is not actually describing the scenery around us. But I don't remember for sure. Do y'all remember how much he like describes it? I don't know if it was intentionally supposed to be a little ambiguous because it's this ethereal, mystical Spirit Shores situation.
From what I remember, it was just a beach stretching in infinite directions, both directions, and there's dragons as far as the eye can see staring straight. And that's about it.
Okay. There you have it. Okay.
Yeah, I think Brandon's definitely leaving our imaginations to do the heavy lifting as he often does on purpose. That's part of how he's writing, is he wants you to fill in the gaps of what this place looks like. But yeah, I thought that one was super fun. So, and that is the last bit of artwork except for the like end papers at the end. So lots of cool artwork in this one for sure.
And then we talk about Noadon.
Yes.
And then Noadon.
Crazy. Crazy.
Okay. So I was at work, listening to this at work, and Hoy shows up on the Spirit Shores,
And I'm like, oh, cool. We're going to get, if not a Hoid therapy session, then just a chat with Hoid. I was happy that my prediction was correct, that Hoid would have a small cameo at the end of the book.
For the record, I responsibly baited you on that one of getting your Hoid predictions, because there actually was a Hoid thing coming and I wanted you to be thinking about it.
Right.
Want that on the record.
You don't get credit for that. Anyway, the Hoid appearance was had me on cloud eight already. So we were discussing, and Hoid was like, yeah, I'm trapped in some vault or whatever. I was like, that's weird. And then he just launches on some Hoid therapy, full-on Hoid therapy session for Starling. And he's like, have I ever told you the story of why is King Noadon? And Starling's like, oh, from that, from Roshar? You have a soft spot from Roshar, or about Roshar. And I was like, me too, Starling. I do too. Keep, let him talk. And yeah. So Hoid goes on this maybe page, maybe two page story about why is King Noadon and the turning of the tide against against in the war was when he gave responsibilities and power to the capable common soldier, to the common man, to the heralds. And first off, I was excited to talk about that story and the implications of that story. But just on the surface, I know it on reference in Isles of the Everdark, and having named this podcast coming up on 6 years ago, following Noadon just based on vibes, I was over the moon.
It really is. Like, I'm wondering who you have on the inside, Trevor, to keep,
yes,
keep relevant. Because I remember being like, oh, this is going to be like the most important name in the Cosmere when we started this.
Which turned out to be true.
I didn't think that at the time, actually, because I did not know about the Cosmere. I was just like, this is going to be the most important name in the Stormlight Archive. But at the time, there were only the first three books. And then we didn't really see Noadon for a while. Thankfully, he comes back and really becomes relevant again. But I did not expect to hear this in this book. But yeah, I absolutely like laughed out loud with happiness when I heard that, because I'm like, that is crazy awesome. You threw out this name before me and Elliot had any idea who Noadon were. You were like, I think this would be a good name, and it's like still relevant here is like way too cool. Like, I don't know, some things you just can't make up, you know.
Who knows, maybe we inspired Brandon, he saw our podcast name, was like, oh, I better make that character important.
That's what I was thinking. Like, Noadon is now gonna be akin to Hoid, like he's going to be referenced in every Cosmere book, because he's got to keep it where we're still following Noadon, right?
Almost on level with Damu, where he just shows up real briefly everywhere.
Yeah. Almost.
I did have the briefest thought of, is there any way he put this in there for us? No. But could it? No. I had the briefest thought of like, there's no way that he just throws Noadon in here because he's as big of a fan of Noadon as I am. But no, that Brandon, if you're listening and you put Noadon in here for us, let us know.
Yeah, thank you, Brandon. You're awesome.
Email. Yeah.
And then Hoid gives Starling a full-on therapy session as she's working her way through her leadership dilemma.
Yeah, so Elliot, I thought of you on this therapy session, because you have, not to get like super personal, but you, especially like in your work setting, I think, have been thrust into like a leadership position in last recent years of your work.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't help but think of you as this Hoid story came out or played out, of a good leader is someone who pushes responsibility onto their team and expects them to perform professionally. And yeah, I thought of you and specifically your work and how you have done that over the last couple of years.
Oh, I thought this was great. This is not the first time that Brandon has really eloquently spoken into leadership skills. That's all over. There's all kinds of examples in the Cosmere of people who face a leadership dilemma and actually use a very unique leadership skill in a really good way. I think Brandon understands leadership really well. Yeah, I like this. I like this a ton because it's a super relatable problem for any kind of leader. And we talked about it a couple episodes ago. I brought it up specifically because I knew I wanted to talk about it again here of if you're in a tough jam and you're trying to help your team succeed, but they come up with the dumbest idea you've ever heard of, what do you do? Do you squash them? Do you let them run with it and fail? Like, what do you do? That's a tough place that I think probably a lot of people have been at in some level of, you know, scale. And so for Starling to pose that question to Hoyd, I was like, ooh, yes, Hoyd, please do tell, because I would love this answer too. And his answer is great. Stop shielding them and start leading them. I was like, ooh, yes. The leading is not always protecting someone. Leading is not always making something as easy as possible on someone. Sometimes leading is stepping aside and saying, okay, I'm just going to push. You tell us where we're going here, and I'm going to get you all the resources that we need to succeed there. And I thought it was really good.
I've thought about this mostly in a professional setting, but I think this could also be used in like a parental setting as well, where you're not always going to be there for the people that you're responsible for. You need to train them and not only provide for them. So if a child or anybody is put into your custody, you need to make sure that they are having the opportunity to develop and having the opportunity to fail. And that is in some stages more important than simply providing for them and shielding them. So yeah, I thought it was really good.
And I think it brings forward, you know, whether it's a parent or a leader or whoever, lots of leaders, lots of parents out there say, oh, I believe in my child. I believe in my team. I know we can do it. But do they actually act that way? If you truly do believe in your child, are you letting them take on the challenge? If you truly believe in your team, are you truly handing them all the power and saying, okay, I believe in you, go? There's a lot of people who will say it and not do it. And Hoyd really pushes Starling to actually do it, which he does.
Yeah. And on the other side of the situation as well, you as a leader, like, grow in learning how to hand things over and how to trust in a way, right? Like, sometimes you are like, yeah, I'm handing this over or allowing someone to do something and they will fail. But allowing them to learn and grow is how you then create more leaders and more, like, developed, you know, children and coworkers or whoever you may be inserting into this situation. But it's like, I'm at least thinking of myself, it's really hard. Like, I'm a bit of a, I know how to do it right, let me do it type, you know, like if I know what to do. And so like letting someone do it and like, frankly, watching someone do something poorly, like grinds my gears if I know it can be done like better. But letting go is like a good, it's the good, right thing, you know, most of the time. And so like, it's also good, not just for them, but for yourself as well, which is really cool. I loved that example as well. It was great. The Hoyd therapy sessions, I feel like they just keep getting better. There's so many good ones. And yeah, I feel like this was a home run.
And then you read it a second time and you realize there are some nuggets in here.
Yeah.
Or if not nuggets, ominous hints at things. Each time Hoyd drops one, my eyes just kept getting bigger and bigger, because he starts off fairly early in the conversation going, you know, oh yeah, I'm here because I'm trapped in a vault. You're what? Like literally? You're literally in a box somewhere?
That's what it sounds like. He needs the intensifier.
Apparently. And then he's like, oh yeah, and I can't really get help because my wife and I are not on speaking terms. You're what?
Yeah.
You're what? That one gets even more complicated, right? He's like, oh yeah, there's this complication of she doesn't even remember who I am anymore. Like, oh. Okay, a lot's happened since we've seen Hoyd last. And then he goes, okay, I need help, Starling. If you get a chance, can you go tell the twins I need help? Tell the twins I need help. That could be nothing. But I started going down lots of rabbit holes, probably because I have twins of my own. Are these Hoyd's twins?
Oh, I didn't think about that.
I think my guess is that these are twins we obviously have not met yet. Maybe it could be Hoyd's twins, but I was thinking more so like these are probably going to be some characters we're introduced to before long. I wonder if this is like we have, you know, my crazy thing to throw out there would be we have Mistborn Era 3 coming up before too long.
I'll throw a dart in that direction. I could swear I saw somebody, I can't remember where, maybe it was in our Discord somewhere, spinning a theory that lots of Stormlight spoilers about to fly at you here. Shallan's pregnant. Somebody had a crazy theory with like a little bit of evidence to back it up that she's pregnant with twins.
Yes.
Could this be Shallan's twins?
Mm.
If Shallan even has twins.
That'd be crazy. That could happen, I suppose, right?
One has red with blonde stripes in their hair, and one has blonde with red stripes in their hair.
There you go.
There we go.
And maybe they're like higher ups in the Ghostbloods now at this point in the story. And Hoyd is like, oh man, if anybody can get me out of this fix, it's the twins who are off there running the Ghostbloods. Shallan's kids.
Yeah, I believe the Shallan twins theory is based off the fact that Ja'anat refers to or references Shallan's children, plural. So there's a bunch of hypotheses that Shallan has multiple children that she's bearing. For some reason, my brain went to Vasher, and that we're going to go revisit Warbreaker and Vasher. Doesn't Vasher have like a brother or something that he references? Am I making this up?
I don't think so. I think you are making that up. I can't say it with 100% certainty, but I think you are. I was almost wondering, so there. I was trying to think of, have we seen any set of twins in the Cosmere period? And I don't think so, but part of me wondered, like in Elantris, I feel like they had some big families going on. And I feel like it would be reasonable if one of the families had, if there were twins in there somewhere, but I don't see how that would be relevant. So I feel pretty confident these are twins that we have not yet met at all. But I have a feeling that we will meet them sort of next. I feel pretty confident either Stormlight 6 and it's Shallan having twins, or Mistborn 3, Era 3, or Fires of December somehow or something like that. Something in the next selection of releases. There'll be notable twins.
Ooh, are we going to see Hoid trapped in a box in Fires of December? Is that going to be his predicament in that book as he's locked in a vault?
We've seen him as a coat rack, so we I have. Would not put it past that.
I wish I knew more about the Fires of December than I do, but I have deliberately not looked up anything. So,
all right, does that cover our brief chat with Hoid in Spirit Shores?
Yeah, we
I think so.
We jump back to Dusk, and he has a vision of the past of Kakaban. And is this the same chapter, or did he already find? No, he has to get to the center of the island before he finds the bones.
That's yeah, right. Yeah, you're okay. On the right track.
Yeah, so he has a vision of Kakaban, and Kakaban stays behind to confront the Daquara as they're getting chased to this island to defend his. Is he sailing with multiple people or just a buddy? I don't remember. It's been a while since I actually read this chapter.
He has at least one buddy who he ends up saving because he abandoned ship. The Daquara comes after him, yada yada. So there's at least one other guy who's with. But there's another companion he's with, and it's ambiguous in this chapter who it is. But this person is coming back to help him, but doesn't get there in time. And that's all we're told in this chapter. And then later, there's a big reveal.
I miss this. What's the big reveal? I missed this.
So in this chapter right here, he's part of him is trying to hold on. If I can just hold on until my winged companion can come save me. It says that.
Oh, the dragon. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then in later, they find draconic writing that Starling takes one look at and goes, yeah, I know who that is. That's Frost.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I forgot about this.
And so the big reveal, this is all the way at the end. It's chapter six, it's the very last chapter. The big reveal is that Kakoban's companion was the dragon Frost.
Which was really cool. It's so Trevor had his whole spinning thing about Dusk is Kakaban. And it's no, not exactly, but basically Kakaban 2.0 and Starling being the successor of the companion Frost as well is really cool. I like how that was used. But
I felt like that moment was the conclusion of the do we trust the written the oral tradition stories argument they've been having of this whole time Starling's been but that's just stories. And then finally there is a chapter, it's one of the last ones, where they go into the cave where she actually does concede that she thinks the spoken stories have value. And then this, I felt like it's kind of the final nail in that coffin of not only are his stories real, your own uncle was there.
She concedes the point that oral stories can have merit and accuracy based off a written story artifact of Frost's signature.
True. Yes.
which was a little funny. Don't they talk about, to really put a cap on it, don't they talk about how these stories were remembered? Basically, they had it in writing, and then they would come back each year or something like that to recite the stories, and then
the lore mothers all have a powwow about what's true and what's not.
They have a powwow, and they get onto each other if they're ever off on a detail so that they all keep it true and right.
Yeah.
But it was a little funny because I feel like they all came back and I think it was coming back to some kind of form of writing. I could be wrong about that, but they really nail it in that they go jump through hoops and hoops to ensure that everyone is saying the right thing. you know, that it's remembered accurately. So yeah, they really gave a strong conclusion on that question.
In the Kakamon flashback, doesn't Kakamon just like bind the Quara to his will in his dying moments or something, and then it defends the island or something like that?
Yeah, so the way it goes down is Kakamon is on his ship, which, quick little sidebar on the ship, they have sails that are like glowing golden that are sailing on the power of the current, the capital C current, that thing that, okay, that Dust can hear, which I almost, if we'd had time, I would have drew you up a little engineering diagram of solar sails, which are an absolute real thing. You can, yeah, sail space on the light rays of the sun. If you don't believe me, go Google it. Solar sails. It's a thing. Super cool. I got that vibe here of they've got these special investiture imbued sails, which are like sailing on the current. Super cool. Anyway, sailing the ship, they're getting chased by the what he calls the Daquara. And actually, he spells it completely different. I don't know if you guys heard this in your audiobook, but the word Daquara is completely spelled differently in Kakoban's usage of it. Oh, it's quite strange. Yeah. And the Daquara is described specifically also as the like original version of the entities, the many armed demon creature thing. It's not a snake,
yeah, yet. Right.
It's the glitchy many armed thing chasing them. He realizes that they're after him. So he chugs a whole jar of investiture to draw its attention and he dives off the ship. He's so full of investiture, he can float in the not water. So he tries to swim to this island just to pull the Daquara off of his dude, so let them get away. But his bravery, I guess, in claiming the Daquara as his conquest through his act of sacrifice gives him like this dominion over it, and then it has to stay and guard his bones on that island because he's got so much intent. He's got like so much intent that it just like locks it in on him. And then I think the implication is then as it sits there on that island, it's close enough to Dromanad that it ends up soaking up enough of the like identity from Dromanad that it becomes the snake Daquara that the Elykan people have a myth about. And yeah, so then it becomes snake beast that's trapped to this island because Kakoban's bones are there.
We're not actually tying the Daquara in infinite knots or making less infinite of the Daquara with knots, sadly. The implications of strong willing this entity into doing what you want, I think, is actually really important moving forward. That's another key piece of information that Starling and her crew are going to get out of this book, is you actually can harness the entity. You just have to be cool and epic like Kakamon.
You just have to want it bad enough.
Right. You just have to be better, in essence.
You just got to have the faith of a mustard seed and you can move the mountain.
In current day, after the flashback, the Daquara attacks. Isn't it because Chrysalis tries to like sneak onto the island or something with one of her nodes, and then the Daquara like lashes out at everybody? And this book gets way more Moana-y really fast instead of less. So I don't know how much you guys have watched Moana, but I have quite a bit. I have a 5-year-old daughter, and I watch Moana quite a bit. And the climax of Moana is trying to get past the big fire monster on the outer ring island to get to the inner ring island. And the way you do that is you just wayfind better. You just gotta outmaneuver it. And that's exactly what Dusk does here. He jumps on his little boat and he spears a fish
and like cuts hard turns and, you know, outmaneuvers this entity. I got this section of the book did not get D Moana fight. I got huge Moana vibes from this section.
I agree with that. It's pretty true. The Moana allegation is pretty hard to beat right now.
But he's not singing at the top of his voice while he's doing it. So completely different, right?
Yeah, but he's like laughing and having a grand old time.
That he is. So yeah, Daquara starts to go rampage. Because Chrysalis sets it off, like you were talking about, that causes the Skadrians to discover Chrysalis. So kind of in the midst of all this going down with Dusk charging after the Daquara and all that, Dager has captured himself sleepless. And it ain't going well for Chrysalis by about the end of these chapters here.
I should have... This is getting into next episode a little bit, so I won't go too far into this. I should have given Chrysalis a little bit more credit than I have in the previous episodes. I did not trust Chrysalis at all. And maybe I should have.
Yeah, Trevor, you were a big Chrysalis hater. I was kind of trying to...
I wouldn't say hater, I would say doubt.
You were like so adamant that Chrysalis was going to ruin everything and be the worst in the world. I wouldn't say the worst. I think I haven't gone back to listen to it, but I remember it being pretty strong. You were on a pretty strongly on the other side of the fence. I'll go listen back. I'll be fair, but I think you were a bit of a Chrysalis hater.
I'm not sure how I feel about Chrysalis by the end of this book. There's a bit of chapter 55 here at the end of this segment we're talking about, where Chrysalis is talking to Dusk. It's probably Dusk.
Yeah,
got to be Dusk. And does straight up claim that she did not kill the Skadrian president. Yes. She says, I was there, but I was framed. I was the sleepless that was in attendance at that event, but it was political activists or whatever that did it, and I just got blamed for it. Which, I'm mostly inclined to believe that. I don't know if I'm all the way inclined to believe that.
I did have the same thought of, well, that's great if that's true. And right. I don't know if I can believe Chrysalis.
I almost want to paint a bit of a picture here, which I don't know if I get this out of the text, and it's probably just my imagination wanting to add this in. I almost want to view Chrysalis as very much ready to betray them, probably would have, but maybe the fact that they come back for her changes that. Maybe the fact that they all, who Chrysalis knows does not trust her, return their ship into enemy fire to save her. Sorry, spoilers for next chapter here, next episode. Might be like the turning point for Chrysalis, of Chrysalis actually at that point, kind of post after this book, becomes loyal to this crew.
I'll just say I am completely sympathetic to Zietzi. My fear of Chrysalis is well founded, and it will take quite a bit of evidence to overcome that. Anything else in the episode?
Can I wrap this episode up actually by making a reference to a movie that I'm pretty confident that not one single of our listeners is going to get, and Trevor, you might be the only one.
I'm very intrigued on what this movie is now. I don't feel like my media is that niche, but maybe it is.
If you're listening to us out there and you're familiar with the movie I'm about to talk about, please send us a comment, because I would love to know the one in 100,000 people that know this movie that Trevor and I have seen. Paul, maybe you're going to know this too, but I'm kind of banking on the fact that you don't. Maybe you do. You like old movies. In chapter 50, go back a little bit, the military police lady who... I think I wrote down her name is like Saja or Seja or something like that. She's interrogating Dusk. And I started laughing literally out loud as I'm reading this, because I got flashbacks to 7-year-old Elliot, maybe 9-year-old Elliot, watching movies in our home. Because what is playing out here in this chapter instantly made me think of this super obscure Danny Kaye movie called Court Jester.
Oh my goodness.
And if you don't know what Court Jester is about, because I'm guessing 99.999% of you guys do not, movie Court Jester with Danny Kaye in it. Danny Kaye is much more famous for White Christmas, I think it is, with Bing Crosby.
Correct. I mean, well, let's preference this before you set up the scene. This is a well-known movie from the 40s.
The 50s, like, yeah.
if you watch old movies, there's a decent chance they've seen this.
Maybe. Anyway, Danny Kaye movie, Court Jester, 1950s. So the premise of the movie is Danny Kaye is playing this court jester who's a bumbling idiot. He's super goofy, messes everything up. He's just making a fool of himself. And he accidentally takes the place of a spy who is trying to infiltrate this king's court as the jester. So this actual spy is supposed to be getting in there, and Danny Kaye like accidentally bumps him off a cliff or something and takes his place on accident. So he becomes the court jester in this court, and everyone around him, all the courtiers and all these other people, they all think he's a spy. And he doesn't know it. And there's all these scenes where he's like passing along information that he doesn't even know about. Because they'll have conversations where like they're trying to grill him, like, you know what the answer is, you know what it is. And he's like, I have no idea. Oh, I'm playing hard to get, are you? You know, kind of conversation where he's pulling off this perfect spy because he doesn't know anything. And I got that vibe from Dusk here in this chapter, where the military police lady is in, like, interrogating him. And he's, you know, doing his usual Dusk thing of, oh, that wasn't a question, so I'm not going to say anything. And she's, you know, grilling him with questions, going, oh, I know you're a paid actor. You're a paid actor. The fact that you're not saying anything confirms the fact that you're a paid actor. And I know that I have the evidence I have here. Man, how are you so good at this? Ah, I'm going to have to go get my data elsewhere. And it's just like, man, that is like a scene right out of Court Jester.
Let me just say, your memory of that movie was way better than mine. And
you were three.
Right, exactly. So now that you have refreshed my memory on the plot of that movie, yes, you're right that I didn't have that movie on my radar. Yes, that is funny.
That makes me want to go rewatch that movie now, because I haven't seen it in 20 years or more. All right, anything else, gentlemen, for chapters 49 through 55?
I think that's nothing it. Without talking about the final chapters, so
yeah, let's get into it. Let's move on so we can get to next week and cover the final chapters. Next week we're going chapter 56 all the way through the end. So I will see you there, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Toodles.